Aye, I'm 66. The 29th of April, 2019, to the 28th of April, 2020. Over. Submerged in dark water by Olaf Kornea. There was nobody there. I stared straight out into the darkness and let out a breath. It was the dream, or at least something in the dream that had grabbed me. It was only a second ago, but it felt like an eternity, and the images were already being blurred out. I'd been immersed in the ocean, the beautiful, blue, massive, the quiet, the relentless, the purposeless. But something had grabbed me, and had tried to pull me out of there. I sat up in bed. Fuck, it was today. This was no ordinary Monday. It was today. I checked my watch. Already a 8:15. This day would have been reasonably stressful anyway. But now it would include speed walking. That meant sweat marks on my shirt, and I hated that. It was unworthy for a man of my age. On top of that, the knee hurt more than usual. Outside, the kids were hollering on their way to school, and the November rain was drumming softly against my window, creating a mystic sound that pulled my thoughts back to the dream. Someone or something had been calling for me, like a long echoing over the sea surface. I had seen something important far away, but no, not now. To the Hackney kids, this might be a regular day, but not to me, and now I was in even more of a hurry. Once out on the M1 in the white Ford Transit van, I felt better. The van was humming along loyally, and the tea in my paper cup was warming inside. A calm tone arose inside of me, a low, convincing tone that only sang for me, "Everything is going to be fine, Bill. You will make it. Today is a big day, even if no one else will ever know about it. Today could, of course, result in a short play or at least a text to start with." Suddenly, the tone was ripped apart by a noise coming from outside. Those sodding sirens, a police car whizzed past me at least 100 miles per hour, like mud being stirred up from a loch floor. All my thoughts now strayed, just when they had been starting to fall into place. After 5 hours, including a quick curry that tasted like shite and a few quick steps for the knee, I was there. I parked the car in a garage close to Queen Square, checked the watch, and realised I had over an hour before it was time. So I just sat there in the white Ford Transit van, staring emptily in front of me. A crack in the day, all the mud sitting still on the bottom of the loch. This would be a packed week, with loads of stuff in the calendar. It was ragwort week, and books would need to be packed and posted. I had a 40-minute interview with Kevin Williamson planned, but it could be postponed if needed. And then it was something else, something I couldn't remember right now. And today, of course, the 4th of November 2019, not your ordinary Monday, maybe ordinary for everyone else, but not for me. Or maybe it was an ordinary Monday and everything I did today was just in vain. The morning stress, the 5-hour van drive, the shite curry. I could have been in my room now, just working away, thinking along slow lines instead of being here in Liverpool. Or why that room? I could have been somewhere warm, with a book in my hand, maybe in the south of France and a drink in the other, doing nothing at all. I mean, why did I keep running all the time? I knew I answered something when people asked me. But if I only answered myself, I closed my eyes, and the blue, huge solidness embraced me. All quiet, urges. Nothing. Just ocean. I sniggered and opened my eyes. What if someone would have been in my head right now? Bill Drummond and his doubts. Stupid thoughts. I realised I had been holding the wheel firmly all this time. So I let go of my hands and combed my hair just to let them have something to do. I opened the van door and the smell of wet parking garage hit my nostrils. And a second later the words, Urban Petrichor. Amazing name. Should have been a band. But I pushed those thoughts away. It was time. I zigzagged between the pools of water and Cross Hall Street, took a left on Victoria Street and sped up as much as my knees allowed me to. 66 years and 6 months old, like a record by Urban Petrichor, played on double speed. But they'd obviously been a band with pitched down guitars and slow or really dark drums, so it still sounded just a tad too quick. I checked my watch again. 3 minutes left. My coat flowed around me, and I rode down the streets of Liverpool like the Lone Ranger I was. All doubts were dead. Not just dead, buried too. And finally, there I was, standing on that insignificant square of iron on Matthew Street, where I'd been so many times before, 1973, 1976, 1983, 2013, and now 2019. The other occasions had been powerful performances, but this time would be something extraordinary. I checked my watch one last time, and the second hand was ticking closer and closer to its destiny, determined since the dawn of time. Everything before this had just been foreplay. I was Bill Drummond. I was 66 years, 6 months, 6 days and 6 seconds old. I closed my eyes. Later that night, in my hotel room, I stretched out on the hard bed and put a pillow under my knee. Suddenly, I remembered the rest of the dream from this morning. I'd been submerged in dark water, but something had grabbed me and pulled me up out of the waves like a leviathan from ancient times. Once up in the air, a few hundred metres above the surface, I glanced out over the world. It was just like looking at one of those many maps I had lost myself in as a child. But I saw everything from above and from the side at the same time. And I saw the time dimension going both backward and into the future, thousands of miles from Liverpool. I saw a huge cruise ship circling without really going anywhere. It was just off the coast of California. I zoomed closer and saw the people on the ship. I saw the panic in their eyes. I saw disease and death. It was 4 months into the future. Then I woke up.
Under. My Arsehole is Hurting by Maki Suzuki. I only realised I was 66 on the 6th day of that year, clearly not bothered to celebrate or commiserate. I would have continued ignoring my birthday if it wasn't for a letter I received from my father. In itself, the event was worth noticing, since he was neither a talker nor, if I can recall correctly, never addressed me first. He's not mute, and can at times speak for hours, but he always needed someone else's prompt in order to do so. I had never seen him send a letter that wasn't business-related, and he certainly never sent me a postcard, let alone a letter with so much blank space to fill. I took a deep breath and opened the brown envelope, which contained a single sheet of A4 on which he had written, "Let's go to Georgia." He had not bothered to sign it, I immediately knew this came from him. The mien was surprising, but the content of wanting to travel was very much of his character, something of a bug I have inherited myself. Mention a country I've not been to, and I'm already halfway there. I picked up a sheet of A4 to paint my answer, but decided against it, since the best moment for such a trip would be within 2 weeks before. Anything else in my schedule could postpone the trip, to the extent of blurring the difference between cancelling and postponing. Instead, I jumped into my van and drove the 58 miles to my father's house with my passport and a bag I always keep for such occasions. As the key enters the ignition slot, I tap my right thigh where my wallet is, my left where my phone is, my heart pocket where my proof of international identity is. I greeted my father, who was himself ready with a bag of underwear and basics. After calming him down on this unnecessary hurry, we looked up the flights on my laptop, and sure enough, a return flight was available for a reasonable price considering the unreasonable plan. I found my father rather sharp, both mentally and physically. His regular use of a Brompton bicycle for a couple of hours a day had kept him alert and fit. From my end, I avoided mentioning the surprise provoked by his letter, as well as why he had chosen Georgia. I left the van at his house. He was chattier than usual, and he kept on speaking to strangers, from the Uber driver to passengers on a bus, and finally both staff and tourists at the airport. For a second, I wondered who this person was and played the game of scrutinising his face until one doesn't recognise a person and a new face appears. I felt too uncomfortable when he started flirting with a flight attendant and had to intervene, wondering whether I was sometimes too forward myself and this could be misinterpreted from an artist's curiosity to a creepy attempt at bedding strangers. Overall, his behaviour was met with amusement, and strangers accommodated his intrusion in their lives. One young man stayed for 20 minutes talking about politics of the 80s with him in front of the Tbilisi National History Museum, interrupted in whatever he was doing. 20 minutes on, the curiosity turns into a polite attempt to leave, but my father skillfully reignited the conversation, and it would continue up to an hour. All this was fine, and I'd be witnessing the encounters like an anthropologist, taking mental notes on how patient people can be, but also admiring the perseverance of my father, who was neither an artist nor a writer, the vampires of situations, researching human reactions for the sake of an upcoming work. I was fascinated. Why was he doing this? Did he crack the code, the meaning of life, the enlightenment of living one's present? As an artist, I was both fascinated and ashamed that I didn't quite catch the reasons or apply this behaviour to my own practice of living. Two specific interactions during the trip showed a darker side of such a friendly character. As I was starting to think my father had discovered the secret for harmonious living with the other, he started questioning why he had to pay for his sandwich with the flight attendant, whose smile diminished for every minute the anger of her customer was creating an aura of discomfort at this altitude. Will everyone join and agree that for the price one pays, it was certainly a little rich that we had to buy a frankly basic cheese sandwich? I didn't have to pretend I didn't understand the situation, as I very much didn't. Two passengers offered to buy him something to eat, which he declined politely before going further into a rant that kept an ambiguous level of threat. In the end, the stewardess agreed to give him the sandwich, although I saw her insert her own Visa card in the machine to pay for it. The second event started when I heard a knock on my hotel door, and I recognised the young lady from the reception. She was shaking, and she said that my grandfather was in pain in the lobby. I put some clothes on and descended the stairs while checking my phone. It was 3 a.m. and the hotel was dead silent, except the moaning of an animal, which turned out to be my father screaming that his arsehole was hurting. Those were his words, and he accompanied the repeated sentence by pointing at his buttocks, in case the receptionist, whose English was perfect, didn't quite know where an arsehole is. As I questioned him, he managed to explain he was constipated, but that he urgently needed suppository for relief, that he was in pain, that the hotel staff were idiots. We called an ambulance, and I was relieved to see them come, although by then his screams were threatening to awaken everyone in the hotel. We climbed into the ambulance, and he had a fight with the nurses as he refused to lie down. I could see how counterproductive this conflict with people who are supposed to help was, and I smiled to make up for my dad's behaviour. In my haste, I had left my phone and wallet at the hotel. The hospital was absolutely silent, and a grumpy doctor and a nurse, I believe, was still sleeping, were waiting when the ambulance arrived. I looked around and could not see any lights nor buildings. Was this hospital in construction? The next half hour was an absurd loop of not wanting to lie down because of pain, matched by a refusal to do anything if the patient was not sitting down. My body language is trying to support both teams. Eventually, I had to ask whether they did have anyone come in with injuries in the lower back end, which would necessitate another position from the suffering patient. As the doctor said, it never happened. My dad stood up, and we left in a hurry. There we were, in the middle of a no-man's land, without phones or money, the street lights flickering as if it thought it belonged to a movie. My father had forgotten his shoes inside and his belt was undone. My own feelings were unclear, especially as one after another stray dogs started to appear, growling and, did I imagine this, looking at us as if we were food. I pointed at this imminent threat. My dad said, "Don't worry. I have seen this on my travels in China. If they bite us, we just have to go to the hospital for a rabies shot."